right, folks, welcome to this episode of Beyond the Resume, a Jackson Lucas podcast. And I am one of your hosts, Chris Tapa, along with our other host,
Lisa Flicker.
And today we spoke with Vlada Kniff, PhD, don't call her a doctor. She is the president of the New York City Public Housing Preservation Trust, aka the Trust. And they're taking New York City's housing stock and preserving it, their public housing, and preserving their public housing, which is a pretty amazing and huge job.
And she's fantastic. I love the grit and the tenacity, and you could just tell she runs it from the heart and in an authentic way. She's somebody I feel like we would love to be friends with.
I want to hang out with her. Her description of her train ride from Uzbekistan to, I think it was Moscow, before they immigrated to the U.S. was awesome. I mean, what she saw on the ride. So from Uzbek to Brooklyn, she was Lisa's neighbor, and she seems to have a very humorous husband, which is awesome too. So enjoy. You'll learn about all the skill sets required to run this organization and what has made her a success. With that, have a great week.
Have a great week.
Vlada, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm great. Happy to be here.
Thanks for coming on. So, Lisa, you don't know this, but someone I know, Jillian McLaughlin, who is the chief operating officer at New York Public Housing Preservation Trust. She used to be at Smart Labs. So I interviewed Jillian when she was at Smart Labs years ago. So I reached out to her and I said, hey, what's going on with this new role you got? And she's like, you have to meet Vlada. So that's where we are.
Those are the best guests that come so highly recommended.
I was like, oh, no, I want you, Jillian. She's like, no, you have to have Vlada. I said, okay, all right.
Jillian's
She is wonderful. It is my first podcast, so be kind to me.
You're going to get it. We're kind at the beginning. The end gets a little tough.
Child's a performer, so it's in the blood.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't mind performing. I actually prefer large groups. I think it's being a product of two engineers. My parents are engineers. And the one-on-one interactions are okay. Larger groups are, you know, more difficult. The very large groups are awesome. So 200 people.
200 people, that's your minimum.
The larger presentations. But yeah, I've been doing those for a couple decades now.
All right. Well, Vlada, you're the president.
Yes.
So tell us about, there has to be an acronym for this that I don't know about, the New York City Public Housing Preservation Trust. Do you have an acronym for that?
PHP Trust, but we don't use it. We just call it the Trust.
The Trust. Tell us about the Trust.
Yeah, the Trust is a really exciting, it's a new public agency. It's a government agency, public benefit corporation, that was created by Governor Hochul in 2022. And the primary purpose of it is to preserve 25,000 units across public housing in New York City.
Whoa. How do you do that?
Well, there are some really great tools in the legislation. We have the ability to transition the properties from Section 9, which is public housing, to Section 8, and secure additional subsidy. New York City public housing has suffered from disinvestment. Our capital need is $80 billion at the moment. So it's an incredible need. So to solve for it, you need to fix all of the building systems. The plumbing, the ventilation, the elevators, et cetera. And so the Preservation Trust is able to do that. It's able to secure capital funding by going through this transition and build a capital stack and finally do the work that needs to happen, has needed to happen for the last couple of decades. And the other great tool under the legislation is we have alternative delivery methods that allow us to do work really fast more efficiently, more cost-effectively. And so that is being a public servant of close to 20 years. It's a little bit of a gift. I feel like I've done my penance in using less efficient delivery methods in the past and now have this great ability to deliver efficiently and cost-effectively.
And do you feel like the new city of yes? And I don't know kind of, I'm sure as much as you do about it, But do you feel like that's kind of leading us to a better place? Because we definitely have a huge shortage here in New York.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a need for housing. There's a tremendous need for housing across New York City. Being a product of being an immigrant, growing up in New York City, having to suffer through housing insecurity as a kid, it is something that's near and dear to my heart. It's been really important for me. City of Yes is created to deliver on more housing. But our institution is really about preservation. It's about preservation of public housing.
Well, that's a good transition. Let's talk about that young Vlada, immigrant raised in New York. Tell us about your background. Where were you born? Where were you raised? Did you always dream of being the president of the trust?
Did I ever dream of being the president of the trust? That's a really great question. I think that my interest has been, and if you look at my resume, you'll see that most of it has been in sustainability. A lot of it has been in water specifically. And so it does go back to my early days when we were going through the immigration process, and I grew up in Uzbekistan. To go through the immigration process, we have to travel to Moscow, to the American embassy, go through the process. And my dad was the deputy director of the Ministry of Trade. So he had a trip, but my mom and my sister took the train to Moscow from Tashkent. And I remember the train stopping and me looking out the window and seeing a desert, but there was a boat in the middle of a desert. And I turned to my mom and I'm like, what's happening here? Why is there a boat in a desert? And she explained to me that that area used to be the Aral Sea, the fourth largest lake in the world. But unfortunately, that fourth largest lake was diverted to water cotton fields. And that's actually how my mom and dad met. They met picking cotton. It was a requirement of the university to go and do that. And they met young and married shortly after. They tell stories of how when they were young, they would go to this area, they would buy fish. And then if you look on a map, if you Google it, that lake doesn't exist anymore. And so I remember just really that really hitting me really deeply. And it carried through my entire career. When we did immigrate to the United States, the 12-year-old Vlada that speaking to you through the lens of the train window, I was 13 when we moved to the United States. The story goes, five people, five bags. We were very poor. My parents didn't, even though they were both engineers, my mom was running the demand department for the energy utility in Tashkent. But they didn't speak the language. When we immigrated here to New York, they had to take whatever was available. So dad was doing dishes. Mom worked at Brooklyn College at the cafeteria. And really, the first few years were very, very difficult. So we lived in a building very much like Naito on Nostrand Avenue, not too far away from our first property, our Nostrand houses that opted into the trust. So when I was thinking about taking this job, kind of tied full circle for you, I stood there. I got to Nostrand houses. The residents were just starting to vote or consider a vote at that property. And so it all came back. I was like, this is my story. This is how I grew up in a building just like this that had leaks, that had plumbing issues, that had pests, failing elevators. And I've been trying to fix it from a sustainability side of things, but this really needs a comprehensive upgrade. And I need to take this job. Did I know that I would be president? Never in my mind would I ever consider? Did I ever consider? I'm an immigrant girl from Uzbekistan.
The typical story, Uzbekistan to president of the trust.
That's amazing. Where did you live on Nostrand Avenue? I have a feeling we might have been neighbors.
Between J and K.
On East 27th between U and V.
Okay, I know that area. It's close to Nostrand houses.
Yes, that's amazing. And I'm sure there's a tremendous amount of grit that you picked up along the way that led you. I'm sure it's no accident that you're the president.
I have to be reminded, but I think, again, if you look at my resume, my work has always been mission driven. It is the mission of this organization that it, you know, we're here to preserve public housing, to bring dignity back into the developments where it's much needed. And that's what drives me. It's not the title.
Well, when you think about, you know, we rebranded our podcast Beyond the Resume, because there is so much more to people than just where they went to school or what their prior job was or where they grew up. And I think to myself, if you could somehow bottle the grit that you grow up with and couple that with not having to go through so much adversity, somehow you would get the perfect Beyond the Resume.
Right.
True. That's true.
And you have your PhD. Tell us about that. Like, should we call you doctor?
Don't call me doctor, please.
But like, yeah, tell us about, like, you were in school. It seems like you got an undergraduate degree in environmental studies. Why did you keep going through getting more education? What did you kind of learn that through that process that has helped you in your current role?
Well, so did I need to get a PhD? Probably not. But I think it's something that both of my parents always wanted to do, but they had to give up a lot, right? When they came here, they had to give up a lot, and they're brilliant. They're brilliant people. They had their masters in engineering. They're incredible people, really, I think, figured out their way out of poverty. And it was really, I think, that I wanted to carry especially my dad, his legacy in wanting to do this. And I do love school. I think that I'm forever a student. I love learning. I love academia. Be full time in academia. I think it's more like a personal, a little bit of a sponge. But the thing that wakes me up at night and in the morning is the ability to build. So, you know, I think it fulfilled that need of learning, but also carrying out the legacy that my dad couldn't get to as an immigrant here. And so it was a long process. It was 7 years. I worked through all of it. I had a child in the middle of it. We had a pandemic in the middle of it. We actually moved. My degree is from LIU Post. And so we moved in 2017. It was supposed to be a 2-year or 3-year move until I finished. My husband is a Brooklynite. He tells a story to people. Not until recently I've heard him say this. I'm like, I can't believe you say this. He's like, you see the claw marks on the LIE? That's from her dragging me to Long Island. So, you know, we looked for a place. It was supposed to be a 2-year, 3-year commitment until I finished. And then, you know, the pandemic happened. We had a child in the middle. We got a dog. We have space now. And so,
yeah, you like to be able to find parking when you go shopping.
I know it's and like I was able to do all the green things that I always dreamed about. I have my solar panels. I have the, you know, electric plug-in. Like I'm doing all the things that I probably would have never been able to afford and find space for, or do as quickly as we did it in Long Island. So that compromise is costing me. It's now resulting in a much earlier wake-up call and a longer commute. But it's okay.
So that all the green initiatives, your passion for sustainability, you went through NYCHA, you were the senior vice president of sustainability there. And that transitions into this role because now you're preserving these properties through sustainability, correct? Sustainable method.
I mean, that is, you guys are going to laugh at me. When I was tapped for this role, I thought about it for some time. You know, to just tie it back to the prior work at DEP, one of my jobs and one of my favorite jobs was to reduce New York City's demand by 5%, water demand by 5%, in preparation for the Delaware Aqueduct shutdown, which is leaking 5 million gallons of water per day. And so as a part of that work, I came across NYCHA, and I was told to do it without touching the revenue. So I had to go to all of the flat rate accounts, and NYCHA was one of those accounts. And it became very clear that NYCHA was leaking. There were clear leaks on the distribution side. It didn't have meters. And so I joked to the deputy commissioner at the time and said, when I got recruited to come over to NYCHA, I said to her, I'm going to go fix the leaks and I'll come back in 2 years. Now, 8 years later, when I got tapped for the president job, I thought about it and I said, you know, I think that I finally will have enough money to fix the plumbing leaks. And so that's, 8 years in the making.
Well, there you go. Tell us about the, I just heard, this could be a little off topic. Maybe I don't know if we're going to keep this in or not, but like, I just heard the other day about the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund from the EPA. Is that something that is affecting your
We're very, very interested in that. We're very, very interested in that.
Someone told me, you got to study up on it. All this money's come from there to a lot of the affordable housing world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the EPA Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, you know, it's a one-time sort of deal. And the various institutions that have received the funding are targeting institutions, particularly like ours, right? Affordable housing institutions or places in disadvantaged communities. So I think that we're an important stakeholder and a candidate for this funding. And honestly, without this kind of funding, it's very, very hard to, now that I'm in the developer's shoes, I used to be sort of on the advocate side and be like, why aren't you doing this? You should be doing all this green stuff. But now that I am the person that's responsible for pulling together the capital stack, it's very clear to me that, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy to bring in enough equity or funding to cover the cost of decarbonization and some of the green initiatives. And so the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund is revolutionary. In my mind, it is, right? It's going to be able to, one, bring in technologies into multifamily sector that have not been accessible and have not been super affordable, and hopefully level the cost for affordable housing in the future. And I think that's its purpose. It's a one-time infusion that hopefully will reduce the cost of the technologies and make it part of the course in the future.
It's interesting because I see you're a part of ULI and we're pretty active in ULI. And I know this year we've kind of worked very hard to make our mission the public-private combination. I'm working closely with the public sector and trying to kind of advance things like this. And so I don't know if you've ever come and spoken at ULI, but we would love to have you if that's something that would be of interest to you.
Absolutely. I would be honored.
Lisa's always recruiting.
In my blood. I can't help it.
Well, how's it's autumn in autumn in New York. Isn't that a song? I'm on the West Coast and it's beautiful. I got a little sweatshirt on. But so how's the weather in New York today?
It's crisp. It's nice. What is it? It's approaching 60. It's beautiful.
Well, turn down the heat and crank up your AC because you've entered the hot seat.
With an easy one.
So you always want to go easy. I always wanted to go with a hard one. So he's going to go with the easy one. Go ahead.
You know what? We're like kindred spirits as Brooklyn girls.
I love it.
All right. Be nice with her. Yeah.
So do you have a book or a podcast recommendation? Anything that you've read or listened to lately that you've been enjoying?
Yeah. I feel like I need to become a podcast person, but I'm not. I am an audiobook girl. And just recently, I actually bought a paper book. So I have a couple. One that I really loved just recently was The Perfectionist's Guide to Losing Control. I feel like it Ooh. Fell into my lap right when, about 3 or 4 months into this job, and I was like, there's so many things that are out of my control, and I really need to figure out how to do that, and that was a really great book. The one that is in a paper copy.
I only read paper copies.
You do? Okay. Well, I bought this one. It's called Say It Well by Terry Zuplat. He is the Obama speechwriter, former speechwriter. It's really good. It's really good. I'm really enjoying it.
Obama was a great speech maker. So
yes, lots to learn.
That's awesome. So we find that many folks who have busy jobs and busy lives, sounds like you have that, have some sort of stability, some sort of like anchor in their life. And oftentimes that comes as sort of, it just seems to be a morning routine. It doesn't have to be a morning routine, but do you have any sort of routine in your day or your life that keeps you grounded?
I do. I feel like I had to create a morning routine. I feel like I had to create additional hours in my day. So my My alarm goes off at 5:20. I think maybe one day it will change, but I've gotten used to it. I think that it's the way things will go from here. But I started to do it about 8 or 9 months ago when I realized that, you know, building a new organization from scratch is no easy feat. But 6:20 is when my alarm goes off. I make a pot of coffee, and I aim for the 6:20 train. And I do leave a little bit earlier. I walk. It's typically like a 10-minute walk, but sometimes I walk around and take an extra 10 minutes. That walking clears my head, gets me ready for the day.
You have like, are you looking at your phone? Do you have your headphones on?
No, quiet. It's, you know, right now it's dark. In the summer, sometimes I catch a sunrise, but right now it's dark. So I have a safety vest that I started to put on, but I get to the train, it's 6:20, and I either go back to sleep for a little bit on the train, or I start my day, I start to do some emails, I start to do some reading, some prep. And when I get into the office, it's around 7:30, 7:45. People know that I'm early. So those folks that want to catch me, we have those early meetings, or I continue to sort of do prep and sign off on things and do reading.
I love that.
It's so wonderful to get a head start on the day like that. I can't say I do it every day, but when you can get in a few hours before everybody else, those hours are so precious.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I often do a morning walk without any, like, I try, like, I so badly want to look at my phone and my emails, but I don't. Yeah. I walk, it's like a 10-minute walk, and it's just like, I have to look at the birds, and I force myself to, like, look around. And then finally, like, I get out of my head and I actually start hearing them.
Yes.
Makes a difference in your whole day, right?
It's a form of meditation.
Right. It is.
So I assume you've hired a fair amount of people in your time there. Are there any special things that you look for when you hire someone?
Yeah, I mean, so this is the fourth time I'm building a team. There were two times where it was very sustainability focused. And one time I had to build a team to manage a consent decree. So it was a little bit outside of my area of expertise. And this time, you know, I think that it is a little bit outside of my area of expertise, but I have people, I have executives like Jillian McLaughlin. I have executives on my team who are helping me make sure that we get the best, right? So it's one of my favorite things to do. Did I say that? I love building teams. It's one of my favorite things to do.
That's phenomenal. And I think I have a client, she always tells me culture, eat profits or whatever it is for breakfast. The focus on the culture is really kind of the number one thing. And so I can imagine you're really good at reading people.
I think I am. And somebody told me recently that I need to focus, as a president in particular, I need to focus on money, people, and culture. So those three things, those are the three pillars that as long as you get those right as the president, you're golden. You're good to go.
Yeah. Well, Jillian is awesome. I know that. She's amazing.
One good catch. More.
There you go. Well, it seems like you have a lot of respect and you admire your parents. Which other mentors have you had? Which other mentors have had the most impact on you?
There's a couple. There's been a couple of consistent people. So Deputy Commissioner Angela Licata at DEP, she still leads sustainability there, but I grew up with her. She was my boss for 11 years, but also really a mentor, right? She's watched me go from an intern to a managing director at DEP. And she is the person that I was talking about when I said, I'm going to go fix the leaks and come back in 2 years. She's like, you only have 2 years. I'm still in touch with her and we're still very close. It was great to have a woman leader and strong leader and, you know, DEP at the time and continues to be. It's a engineering, a male-dominated industry. So having somebody like her, you know, be my mentor and grow up with was really tremendous. And another person I have to say, Warren Liebold, he's passed away, but he is I think he's referred to as the father of water conservation here in New York City.
Oh.
Yeah, so he became a really good friend and a mentor and somebody who I try to evoke his name when I have a chance.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I want to learn the history of water in New York City. I'm sure there's a book written about it.
There's a ton of them. But I want to also mention more recent ones. Deborah Goddard, she led the Capital Division here. I still talk to her. She's somebody that, like, I literally call her every couple of weeks, and she takes my calls. If she's on a cruise, anywhere, she continues to be my mentor. And Lisa Bob Hyatt, my boss, my current boss, amazing. She's somebody who reads people extremely well. If things are unwell, she can see, like, look at my face and be like, okay, what do we need to talk about? How do I ask you this? And just a great, great person.
Vlada, I wish we could go longer. I want you to come to our office. We'll come to your office. I'd love to meet you in person.
Yeah, this was so much fun.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Resume, a Jackson Lucas podcast, where we take a deep dive into the career journeys of some of the top minds in real estate and equip you with the knowledge to move forward in your path towards the success you've envisioned. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe to Beyond the Resume. We're grateful for your support. All episodes of Beyond the Resume are brought to you by Jackson Lucas, building inclusive and diverse businesses through talent acquisition. Visit us at jacksonlucas.com.